listening to The People's Show.
You come at the King, you best not miss.
Left circle, Besser, one time slot shot, he scores. Brock Besser beats Jordan Binnington on the power play, and the Canucks are up 4-0.
With Seth, Dan, and Randeep.
The biggest thing to hit Canada because the Maple Leafs suck.
On the official home of the Canucks.
Goes all the way down the ice, here's Pettersson after it. He's got a chance at a breakaway. Pettersson in clean, is tripped by Murray, but he scores. Dinky Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
Sportsnet 650.
Happy Wednesday. Yeah, it's the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Randeep Janda. You can get us on Twitter by our names. Also hit us up, the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's the People's Show. We need you, the people, to be a part of it. 650, 650. The smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. What's going on, fellas?
What is happening on this dreary spring day in Vancouver? You know, Randeep, just chilling. It's a normal day for us.
Guys, I was ready to put on some shorts, go for a run at some point, get
that's
that patio lifestyle going. Maybe not the run part, but you know what I mean.
That's next week, boys. Next week. The forecast is supposed to it looks a lot better next week. So we're not going to do a meteorology segment to begin this show, but this time next week, it might indeed be patio weather.
It's going to be golf weather. I know that. Eve of the Masters. We're going to fire up some golf TV this weekend, and then we can tee it up next week, fellas. I'm liking the new time slot. You know, I can get a few rounds in the morning this summer.
Oh, you're already talking about your Masters pool?
You mentioned the Masters pool. You mentioned the Masters pool, not me. Not me.
Have you started the promoted tweets yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, they're coming, I'm sure they are.
But I don't know if you know, but for the promo for the show today, I did do a Masters bit, and Bick and the boss were just chirping me about it not that long ago. The morning show, Halford and Bruff were talking about it too. This is the most talked about 20-second promo in the history of sports radio. It's unbelievable.
Some would say it's the office pool that is sweeping the nation.
By the way, password, we're going to talk about that later this hour, but it's going to a vote today. There is a lot going on with the Vancouver Canucks and developments as to what happens next and around the National Hockey League as well. William Nylander not going to play due to a possible exposure with the Maple Leafs. Game is going ahead as planned. As for the Canucks, Nate Schmidt, the latest name added to the COVID protocol list. They've now got 21 players, 25 total within the organization that have gone through testing and are within the protocol. And it's a situation now where we're looking at, as Darren Dreger reported, maybe they can return at some point later next week, maybe next weekend. The NHL may be loosely planning to hopefully have that happen as the Canucks continue to kind of develop out of this. But it's a situation where, you know, still a lot of unknowns, but I think we really, I applaud the Canucks for giving a little bit more transparency to a situation that I think really needed it, Sat.
It really did need clarity, and I am glad the Canucks did send some information out, because yesterday, and this was during the show, we heard Dr. Bonnie Henry come out and say that, to her knowledge, a variant is not involved with the Canucks, or she does not know that a variant is involved or not, and that obviously created a lot of questions. And next thing you know, Francesco Aquilini tweets out about how a variant as dangerous as the current one can rip through a NHL team, and people should be very careful about this and adhere to all the protocols put in place for society to, you know, curb the spread of this variant, and especially with this virus. So it seemed like the two were at odds to some degree. And then with this release that comes out today, it does clarify a bit more that they do believe they have identified that it is a variant, but not what variant it is yet. They haven't figured that out yet. They're waiting for the results on that to know exactly what variant it is. So based on a technicality, both parties were kind of right yesterday, but in this information vacuum that does exist and where people are trying to source stuff, you see a lot of media talking to people and trying to figure out what's going on with that official confirmation. It's hard to know exactly what happened, but I got to say, for the most part, the media did a good job in this market getting pretty close to the truth. And what we heard today, I think, sheds a bit more light. And I think we'll find out very soon if it indeed is that Brazilian variant. But regardless, you know, it means the Canucks are still at least 12 days away from playing again. And there are still more questions that need to be answered in terms of how this all happened and exactly where it all began.
Well, the key thing is that there's no more confusion around that. You have, you know, two sources of information, the Canucks and the BC government. And it seemed, and even today, you're seeing maybe it being portrayed as a, you know, Canucks versus BC government storyline. That isn't it. They're on the same side. The details obviously matter. And now knowing what information the government was coming from that perspective, the Canucks are coming from their perspective, the focus is on how did it get to this point? How can it be avoided in the future? And getting everyone healthy. Those are the three most important things. This is the largest outbreak in the league. The Devils had 19 players on their list. Six games have been postponed up until now. So the most important thing going forward here, guys, is that the confusion, there's none of it. There's clarity. And how do you move beyond this point? You got to know where you came from and how the situation played out. But how do you improve it and make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah. And, you know, immediately when the Nylander news comes out today, you know, a worry for sure that you might have a similar situation. And that's, I think that's a big part of this situation, Sat. I'm not going to play detective and try to figure out all of what exactly happened and how we got here, but the league kind of has to do that to make sure this doesn't happen, especially now that we're into the stretch run of the season and going into the playoffs. And just in general, for the overall health of the players and their families, you don't want situations, these nightmare scenarios, to play out anywhere else.
No, and it will be very telling here, guys, how the league approaches this. And we talked about this, you know, a few days ago, and I'm still kind of, I'd say, skeptical of the league that they would levy a fine on somebody or they would make an example out of somebody. You know, and the NHL's MO, as we've seen through their history, for the most part, is sweep it under the rug, right? So even if there is something here in terms of breaking protocol or something happening or whatever, I'm still skeptical that the league's going to make an example out of Vancouver. But if they do, then it tells us that, you know, there was something else here. And I know there's been rumors about this, you know, guys hanging out here, guys hanging out there, and maybe this is how it spread. There's just rumors, and it's really hard to confirm any of this stuff anyways, because the people that had to be there have to confirm it, and those people aren't really talking. It's a public health thing, and it's also a personal health issue. It's a very convoluted situation. I just hope that they do get to the, you know, the truth of what actually happened so they can learn from it. I'm just skeptical, guys, that the NHL is going to have a very transparent report, and even if wrongs or if people did break protocol, I'm just skeptical that the league's going to finger point somebody and put a levy of fine on them. I'm just not sure the league would actually do that, even if there's something was done wrong.
Well, the reason the speculation is going to come out is that single line in the press release or in that statement was a single unnamed individual picked up the infection in a community setting. That could be anything. I'm not going to speculate on that, but that's the reality of the situation. When you're in a high-octane market, a Canadian market at that, people are going to speculate. But as far as what this means from an NHL perspective, who knows? You know, the team and the players have gone through a lot themselves in the last week. Is the NHL in a position to zero in and have some sort of discipline? Too early to say, and we don't have those details. So you're right, Sat. Like, I'm not sure where that's going to go, but that single line in that statement is something that a lot of folks are going to zero in on, in a community setting especially.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, right? And Dan, you know, it tells you that something happened, but it doesn't necessarily mean, like, and I know it's easy to look at that and say, well, it means a community setting. That means somebody was out doing something, probably what they should not have been doing. I can see the correlation, but I you can't jump to that conclusion because we don't quite know, right? I mean, I know there's been some rumors, there's been some suggestions that something like that has happened potentially, but we'll see ultimately if they get to the truth of it. Right now, though, it's going to be really difficult to have the people that may have been involved to actually confirm this. So we're going based on a lot of speculation, a lot of conjecture, and a lot of correlation where that causation hasn't been proven yet. And I do think that creates a tough situation. And when it comes to people's privacy and also when it comes to public health, you got to be really careful with what you say and what you really think did happen or didn't happen.
Yeah. And the situation is, you know, it's essentially the entire roster now. Jordy Ben, JT Miller, Brock Besser are the kind of the few names that aren't on the list right now. And hopefully the players will be able to come through this and the worst of it is over. But the league is continuing on and there's still going to be Canucks games. I know Deadspin got in on the act today and was saying, hey, just shut it down and all these things. I still don't think that, you know, the league is planning to have the Canucks finish out as much of the season as they can. How much that is still very much up for debate, Sat.
And you know, a lot of that's going to be dependent on the players themselves. I know Mike Reed sends in this question to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. How many players do you guys think will actually opt out? I mean, it's impossible to say. It's just the guess, right? And I know it's been an emotional time for a lot of these guys. I don't think a lot of these players, even the guys that have gone through, you know, the tough symptoms of it, are necessarily worried about themselves so much as people have family considerations as well. I think that is something that's weighing heavily on a lot of people, which, I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. People that have families go through a case of severe COVID with the variant potentially, and you hear the reports that, you know, a lot of these guys, or at least some of them, have been pretty sick and their family's been pretty sick with it. So I do think that comes and plays a part into how willing will these guys be, some of them, to come back and play, to get traded, to play on the road. For this team to not play at all, or for them to cancel the rest of their games, it would essentially have to be all the guys make a decision they don't want to play, which would be unprecedented, and the league is left with no choice but to cancel all their games, which is something I don't foresee happening. And I do think something like Dan Murphy mentioned, April 19th, that could be when the Canucks play again, but I don't think they'll get all 56 games in. I don't think they'll get all 56. They can say all they want about they want to get all 56 games in. At this point, that's going to be all tough thing to do, but I'd be shocked if they don't actually play games again.
It is the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. As Joe says on the Dunbar Lumber text line, just want everyone to recover, humans being first and hockey after. And I think we're all on the same page with that. Edmonton Oilers and Ottawa Senators currently in action. That one is tied up at 1. Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, Leafs and Habs coming up a little bit later on Sportsnet. So we've talked a lot yesterday about Tanner Pearson and that situation continuing to progress towards a potential extension. Now, I think, you know, the next thought is, because this has been a season, we know what the discussion was during the offseason around, you know, how much is this organization willing to spend? What are they willing to do? What are they willing to, what are they unwilling to do in a lot of cases? But you have now the Thatcher Demko contract really working on this Tanner Pearson deal as well. Is this a sign, Sat, that the Canucks are maybe willing to get spending again and maybe planning for more to happen next year and maybe spend more next year for next season?
It does kind of point to that direction, doesn't it? All of a sudden, this whole notion of, you know, you signed Thatcher Demko to a contract, which, hey, we were expecting it to happen, but they totally did. Now you're hearing the Tanner Pearson stuff. And if Tanner Pearson is getting signed, well, like we talked about yesterday, whether we agree with it or not, and I've made my stance very clear on what the Canucks should do with Tanner Pearson, and that is, I don't sign anything right now. I want to hold on to as much cap space as possible. But it tells you that they're probably looking at clearing up cap space one way or another. It's not going to be easy moving guys out, even to what Randeep was mentioning yesterday, potentially with Jay Beagle having a long-term injury maybe, and that could affect him next season. He might be on LTIR to begin next season. Even if that happens, that means you may go over the cap. But if you go over the cap, well, that means you're spending over the cap. That means spending is happening again. So I do think, you know, all the concern that was there this past offseason in terms of money not being spent and the purse strings being tightened up, that's changing right now. And I do think a buyout is back on the table. The question is, who do you buy out and how many guys do you buy out? But I think at this stage, based on everything we're seeing here with what the team is trying to do and, you know, money being freed up again, that a buyout is on the table. So who do you buy out and how many guys do you buy out? Is it even worth it?
Well, shouldn't we just call this the usual suspects part of the show, where you kind of come out with those same names, you line them up, and you essentially focus on the pros and cons? And listen, I know there's a list of guys, and, you know, we've talked a lot on this station over the last, pretty much since he signed his last contract, where Jake Virtanen fits, right? Virtanen's a guy that is one of those usual suspects. I think Louis Erickson, he will forever be a usual suspect, even after that contract is done. And a guy that I would probably focus on, Dan and Sat, is the guy that I'm probably pointing at and saying he makes the most sense to me is an Antoine Roussel. That's a guy that I look at and say, what's he got left? Like, the other guys you can justify in ways, and we'll break it down. But to me, the question with Antoine Roussel is he, have you seen the best of him? Probably yes. I don't think he's getting back to his pre-injury levels. This is a guy that I was really high on, you know, when they signed him, because he had that compete level. He had that X-factor component, and early on, he showed it. But since that injury, he hasn't been that same player. He's flat. He just doesn't have it physically anymore. And buying him out in the offseason would leave you with a $1.7 million cap hit next year and $630,000 after that. So I know we have our list of the usual suspects. If you have any others, please hit us up, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. But I got to really focus on Antoine Roussel, because I think he's shot. I don't think he has it anymore.
It's definitely one of the names that's at the top of the list. And you can get in on this as well. 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. If you are looking to open up some cap space for the Canucks going into this offseason, which they may need to do and probably will likely have to do, who are those players? And you know, the names that really come to mind, Roussel is one. Erickson is another. You're finally at the end of it, though. Do you want to go down that road? And Jake Virtanen, who probably has the most attractive buyout from a cap savings point of view, because he's under the age of 25. The penalties are much smaller. I believe it's under 100K for next year and less than $1 million for the year after, Sat. So, you know, we're looking at a situation where, you know, these are probably the most most attractive names if you are going to explore a buyout. Erickson, Virtanen, Roussel, a lot of the others probably just don't make sense in the same way.
Not to that same degree. And the question with Jake always comes back to, are they going to cut the cord? Will they actually cut the cord on Jake, right? Because, hey, we hear this all the time. Every single year, ever since he's been drafted, essentially, well, 2 years since being drafted, there's been talk about Jake. Should they trade Jake? Should they not trade Jake? What do you finally move on from Jake? What do you do with Jake? Do you waive Jake even? And eventually, he's still back. So if I had to guess, I'd still say he comes back. But going back to what Randeep said, Roussel, yeah, he just doesn't have it anymore. And it saves you 1.3 against the cap. And if they actually do buy out Erickson, which saves you $2 million, well, all of a sudden that's over $3 million in cap space. And that $3 million in cap space, you can point to Tanner Pearson, who they're trying to sign. And I wouldn't give him $3 million. I wouldn't re-sign Tanner Pearson even at this stage. But that's where the money's coming from. Like, this is how you piece it together, right? I think there's a better way to spend that money than to free it up to spend it on Tanner Pearson, for instance. But I do think these things are back on the table again. And that goes back to the whole notion of, well, why is it on the table again? And why are you trying to put money on the books for the year afterwards when you said you're 2 years away? So why, if this all happens, is there a change of plan again? Like, do you think you're a playoff team again next season?
Well, who's making those decisions, right? Like, Jim Benning, a month ago he was saying we're 2 years away, really? And this year you didn't go ahead and look, there's a lot of different reasons why they didn't, you know, push after, you know, the playoff run that they had last year, but now all of a sudden it just feels like, oh, we might have fans back in the building next year. We got to push and get back into the playoffs. I mean, what's the overall plan has to be the question, because it just, it really feels like, and it goes back to the quote that went viral, we live day to day. Like that's what it feels like the Canucks are doing right now, Randeep.
Dan, but this is, I think, the overall long-term solution for this team is clarity on who's running the organization. You have an owner that, obviously, it's their team. They can do whatever they like. But beyond that, you have a GM right now that we don't know where he stands. Who has the overall hockey operations vision of this organization? And that, to me, I've been saying it for a while. I still think this organization needs a president of hockey ops. Whether they're willing to pay for that position, whether they're willing to address that in the offseason is the big, you know, questions, the elephant in the room in this city. But total clarity, yeah, that's a valid question. Going back to your point on Jake Virtanensat, it makes total financial sense to buy him out. The cap would be minimal going forward, and I can understand the financial argument there. The Canucks still need players, though, right? These are guys that next year, you're going to have to get guys on that lineup that can actually play. Antoine Roussel, I don't think he can do it anymore. Louis Erickson, we know what we think about Louis. He's probably destined for Utica, or at least he should be. So the only reason I would keep around Jake Virtanen is if you need guys to fill out the bottom of that lineup, because Antoine Roussel and Louis Erickson, they simply don't seem like those players anymore, and you're going to need guys in that bottom of that lineup.
You do. And, man, it all just comes down to the overall money that's invested. Like, the biggest fear here is, and, like, listen, we're talking about hypotheticals. Two things that have yet to happen. One, Pearson still has to sign. And then two, buyouts actually have to happen. And we're talking as if, you know, these things are fait accompli, which they very well may not be, right? We're just talking about possibilities here. If they go down that road, though, for instance, and both those things happen, that, to me, just take, you're limiting your flexibility this year. This year, to me, is all about be as flexible as you can be. How many guys can get as bargains? You have the expansion draft hovering over you. I can actually buy into the argument, guys, to buy out Erickson as much as, hey, I'd rather squeeze it and not have any money on the books. I can get behind the Roussel buyout, even though on the second year, because you can clear that space and tell yourself, if I have some extra cap space, who knows what opportunity presents itself to me? If I have some flexibility and if I have the means to do something, I could be in a prime position to take advantage. So why would you take away your flexibility this year by keeping a guy like Pearson to a multi-year contract? To me, if you're looking at a 2 or 3 year plan, which you should be, and something they should be doing, and something they have indicated, then everything you do this year should be about long-term and having that flexibility. So why create flexibility and just take it away to run back the same team? Like, yeah, we're talking about running back the same team, essentially. That's not good enough this season.
Well, my only question is, well, because everybody has this question. We talked about it yesterday with Friedge, and every person, all of the people listening here on the People Show seem to have the same reaction. Like, why are they doing this? Why is this such a priority? And I really wonder what that number is going to come in at, and if it's going to come in lower than potentially expected. I had heard Pearson wasn't going to expect or wasn't going to sign anything less than a $3 million average annual value. Now, has that changed? And that's why talks have progressed over the last little while. That I still can't say. But it is really interesting how much this has picked up over the last couple of days. And I do want to see what that number eventually comes out to if the Canucks continue down that road, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. And it also suggests that they haven't learned any of their lessons from loading up on too many wasted dollars in their bottom six. And that can't continue to be a problem with this team. On the Dunbar Lumber text line, lots coming in. Chris, why wouldn't you just waive Jake? Someone will take him. Remember, Jake is making, 3.7 next year of actual cash dollars?
3.4, yeah.
3.4. Braden Holtby is making 5.7 next year. So the cap hit and the actual cash dollars, very much different. That will factor in to how teams approach acquiring those players. Curtis Olin saying, it's just day-to-day with the Canucks. And another text, they've got to get back to the playoffs. So many texts coming in. The people are all about it right now. We want to continue getting in on that. It is the people's show. You're a big part of it. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Smart alternative is at Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street and Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. We'll get to more of your texts. Emily Kaplan will join us as well. It is the people's show. Riccio, Sat, Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to The People's Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
People's Show is all about you, the people, on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jeffro, buyout? After the Pearson rumors, I'm surprised Benning isn't going to try and sign all of these players to contract extensions, seeing as all are eligible after July 1st, that being Erickson, Vertanen, and Antoine Roussel. I don't think that's likely. Is that?
Nope. I don't think so either. Don't think so. See it coming.
Yeah, not going to happen. Does Jake's contract allow him to be exposed to expansion draft? Why would you waive him if he is that possible piece for someone? Maybe Seattle takes him. That would be an interesting scenario, Randy. Problem is the Canucks, they probably have extra spots available when it comes to the expansion draft rather than just purposely leaving Jake off.
Yeah, they don't have many to choose from there outside of their key stars. But here, okay, let's talk about the Jake Virtanen money for a second. Who wants to pick up a player that is owed $3.4 million in real cash next year and the qualifying offer starts in that range? But it's a money thing with Jake Virtanen. It's not necessarily a skill thing. 3.4 is where you're starting unless you choose not to qualify him. So really, that's the issue here. Do you have enough upside in this player to justify this cost? It's not about the player. We have our opinions in Vancouver, but the money right now for acquiring teams, even if picking them up off of waivers, that's significant. And that's the biggest knock on him right now, is there are teams out there that see him as a project that he maybe could figured out in their lineup, and maybe he can be a player. But at that price, it's unlikely. Nobody wants that number.
No, I mean, it all comes down to the number on all these sort of things, right? It all comes down to ultimately how much you sign all these guys for. The frustration here that generally has been a lot of money has been spent on players who don't provide a lot more than being complimentary guys, right? And they've been the guys that they've have prioritized to keep sometimes. And that's the big thing. I see people texting a Crofton guy to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox is saying, there's no way the Canucks sign Pearson, Francesco Aquilini. There's no way he allows them to sign one of Jim's players and all this sort of stuff. Ultimately, we'll see. I mean, hey, they haven't signed him yet. They got to sign him. But I do think if Pearson stays, it's because the owner wants him to stay. Like, I don't think they've ventured down this road without the owner being on board. There is a number they'd be willing to sign Pearson to right now. The question really comes down to how much is he willing to sign for? Is he willing to bet on himself and get the free agency and think he gets $3 million? Because I don't think anybody's giving Tanner Pearson $3 million. So what's the number the Canucks have in mind that ownership has signed off on? Is it $2.5 million per year over 2 years? Is it 2.75 for 2-3 years? Like, to me, there is a number that he's willing to sign off on. Otherwise, you're not having these conversations.
Yeah, and the question, because I've seen it on the Dunbar Lumber text line as well. I don't think Pearson's even worth $1 million, and that's that's a bit of a reach. Tanner Pearson still was 20 goal scorer in his career, had a pretty good season last year for the Vancouver Canucks. Was not great this year, 11 points in the 33 games. But, I definitely would sign Tanner Pearson for $1 million. I think a lot of teams would sign Tanner Pearson for $1 million. But the term and it potentially being a total of around $9 million, that's where it becomes a sticky situation for the Vancouver Canucks. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Randeep Janda. We are the People's Show. Keep coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. We also take your phone calls through the 4 o'clock hour, 604-280-0650. But joining us now, it is Emily Kaplan, ESPN's own Emily Kaplan. Thanks for this, Emily. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you guys?
We're good. You know, here in Canada, we really appreciate when the Americans pay attention to our sports. And you know, seeing ESPN front page news with the NHL and NHL's back on the ESPN tabs, we're really excited this week. I'm pumped. This is good.
Honestly, I've just been pumped. And so the fact that you guys are pumped, too, that makes me feel seen. So we'll share this experience together.
That's awesome. We love it. It's really been it's been an interesting couple of weeks in Vancouver, and the situation continues to be an interesting one as it plays out. And I'm wondering from your perspective, given everything that's gone on, how do you see the league and how they are dealing with this situation with the Vancouver Canucks right now, and how they plan to progress through the COVID situation that the Canucks have gone through?
If I had to say how the league is handling it, I'd probably say cautiously. You know, they're aiming to get them back on the ice by the end of next week, but I'm just told that everything is still super fluid. You know, they don't know how these players are going to recover. We know that there are some guys who are pretty symptomatic with some pretty intense symptoms. And, you know, we'll have to see when these guys get cleared. When can they produce negative tests? When does the cardiologist clear them? Guys who are asymptomatic have different thresholds than guys who are symptomatic. So all of this is to say there's a lot still up in the air, and I know we want some clarity. I think they're handling it, you know, probably as well as they've handled anything at this point, which is just the best you can in the moment.
Well, the question now, Emily, too, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, it's everybody recovering, being healthy, and then being okay. But from the league's perspective, it essentially comes down to what do they learn from this experience, and how do they approach how this all unfolded? Do you think the league is going to take a information approach and, hey, we're just trying to make this a lot better? Are they going to take a bit of a, say, disciplinarian approach if protocol was broken in some degree? Like, how do you think the league's approaching how this all unfolded and how transparent they might be in showing the public what may have happened?
First half, I think they're definitely being just information gathering right now. I do hear that they did ask, you know, the Canucks a lot of questions about their protocol. From my understanding, though, the Canucks followed, you know, everything that the NHL has been asking. I know that there's a lot being made about Adam Gaudette being on the ice Tuesday morning, you know, getting pulled from practice and then confirming that positive test that night. I would guess that that's something that we're going to see, you know, the league look at and say, is this really the best practice? Because the truth is, we are so close to the finish line. And the finish line is awarding the Stanley Cup. That's the moment that Gary Bettman and Bill Daly are going to breathe easy. And they want to do everything they can to get to that point so that next year can be as normal as possible. So if that means they have to change some protocols right before the playoffs, so be it. But you just have to remember all of those protocol changes would have to be signed off on by the NHLPA. And we know that players will have opinions.
Well, the Canucks are going through it right now, but that's more representative of what's going on in Canada right now. We're going through a third wave, and things are pretty serious. But the situation south of the border, we're seeing, you know, teams like the Dallas Stars get vaccinated, the New York Rangers I saw as well on social media. That process is going on. What's the mood like for teams south of the border and U.S. teams? It seems like it's trending positively compared to what's going on with the Canucks right now.
Yeah, well, I was told not to talk about vaccine rollout with Canadians because it's just a little bit of a touchy subject.
It's a little touchy, I think. Yes.
A little touchy, yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm like, frustrated with my state because I was eligible for 3 weeks and couldn't get an appointment. And I was told, just like, Emily, shut up. Like, I got my first shot on Monday. I'm pretty pumped about it. And, yeah, I think that's what everyone here is feeling, is just a little bit of optimism. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. We do know that when a majority of people are vaccinated, that's when we can get fans back. That's what players want the most. That's when we can start getting revenue back in normalcy. So, you know, it's hard to keep track right now of who exactly has received what, but I do know there are a lot of NHL teams getting assistance from the NHLPA as well as the league to procure vaccines when it's available, when, you know, it's the player's turn. It doesn't sound like anyone is cutting the line. And, you know, it could be a very different picture down here come playoff time than maybe it is up north.
Emily Kaplan, our guest here on The People's Show. NHL trade deadline coverage brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family and employee-owned wholesale distributor with locations across Western Canada. Purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies online at Sherritt.com. We are less than a week away from the deadline, and it's definitely trending towards being a quieter deadline than usual, Emily. Who do you think ends up as the biggest mover through the next few days?
It's such a tough question because it really feels like there's just a skewed amount of supply and demand. But if you're talking about people who are unloading contracts, you have to think that the Detroit Red Wings, once again, are going to be leading the pack. They've got a lot of guys that, you know, are playing hard, but they know that in a different environment and maybe given a different role, they could just be the missing piece. And so I'm looking at a lot of those guys to move. And I think GMs are definitely calling Steve Yzerman, and Steve Yzerman's number one goal is collecting as many draft picks and as many prospects as possible. So knowing that this year is not the year, I expect them to be a busy team again.
Who do you think is going to be the best player that gets traded at the deadline, Emily?
That's a great question. You know, and it's funny too, because like you look at the NBA and you see someone like Blake Griffin and you're like, oh, I don't know if that's a great move, but all of a sudden new team, new energy, and like they're figuring it right out. You know, if I'm looking on the Red Wings, honestly, Bobby Ryan is a guy who started the season pretty hot. Like if you throw him on like the third line of Boston, that could be a really, really good pickup. So that's like more of a budget option than like a Taylor Hall or a Kyle Palmieri. I think you can get him for more like a mid-round pick. It's not answering your question. It's just something I'd like to see.
Well, the Avs are the NHL's true juggernaut. Sorry, Chris Johnston. It's not the Leafs. I know he's rescinded that as of a couple of weeks ago. But do they need to do anything at the deadline?
Yes, absolutely. There's one area they need to address more than anything else, and it's the goaltending position. You know, you've seen all the stats. They're freaking fantastic in this 15-game stretch. And a part of that fantasticness is Philip Grubauer. I think if I was voting today, I'd put him in my top three for Vezina. But we saw from that team last year in the playoffs and the way they flamed out, if they are one Philip Grubauer injury away from disaster. And I've talked to guys on that team after last year's playoff, and that's really what they believed. If they just had one goaltender at the end, they were down to like their third string, it would have been a different fate. So I know they got the kid from Buffalo. That's fine. It's good to have bodies there, but I'd like to see them go after one of the bigger names.
At Emily M. Kaplan is where you can find her on Twitter. It's crazy. Like I'm old enough to remember when people were criticizing Joe Sakic for not pulling the trigger on a Matt Duchene trade, and then you know he got the windfall that he was waiting for, and how it all played out. But just like how did Colorado get here? You know, like they were so bad in that lockout year. They really struggled after the Patrick Waugh one miracle season where they made the playoffs. What happened that the Colorado Avalanche have just built an absolute juggernaut here?
You know, I talked to Gabe Landeskog about that in the beginning of the season because, like, if you remember when he was named captain first when he was super young, secondly, the team just sucked. And just imagine, firstly, just being a young guy in this league given that pressure. And I think he's done a really great job with it. But you know, at some point it just became embarrassing when they were the worst team in the league. It was embarrassing for them. Losing every night, it degraded them and they never wanted to do it again. You know, obviously they didn't get the number one pick that year. They slipped to number four. They picked Cale Makar. And I think if you're asking how they built that, I think you would look at that moment as the turning point.
You know, looking at the hierarchy of the National Hockey League, you know, the Colorado Avalanche are unreal. We all know how good Tampa is going to be, especially when they get really healthy. Is there a team that you've been really impressed by that you kind of want to put into that Stanley Cup contender category this season?
For me, and I know people who might have seen my power rankings today and thought they were ranked too low, but it's the New York Islanders. I think that they have all of the components for being a really, really scary team. A team that no one really seems to pay attention to or want to give credit to until all of a sudden it's like the third playoff round and they've already knocked off two people. We were like saying we're going to be Stanley Cup champs. So I do think Lou Lamoriello is going to be very active at this deadline. I think, you know, the number one obvious need is replacing Anders Lee, their captain, as a scoring winger. And I think they'll find someone. And I'm just looking forward to seeing how far they go.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Emily Kaplan. Emily, staying in New York, but going to the other team, the New York Rangers. Adam Fox, he's been their best young player, arguably one of their best players this season. When you're thinking about Norris Trophy contenders, is he a top three guy for you this year? Is he there with Hedman and potentially Cale Makar?
Yeah, I think he's quickly rising, but especially because we know how Norris Trophy voters think. They love to look at those offensive numbers. But he does have a really great all-around game. And I think especially as the Rangers make this push for the playoffs, and it's maybe not so unlikely. You saw how great they played last night. I think he's going to start getting more and more attention.
Emily, we always appreciate the time. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Emily M. Kaplan is where you can find her on Twitter and find her great work at ESPN. The Islanders are really interesting. Barry Trotz is by far and away the best coach in the NHL, and I think they're kind of the sleeper. I'm with Emily on that. The New York Islanders, I'm a believer, especially if they make an ad here to replace the Anders Lee injury.
Yeah, I could totally see it. I could absolutely see it. I mean, they're a team that is built for playoff hockey, the way they play, especially the way they're coached. They need a bit more firepower up front. Paul Mieri just seems like the perfect fit for them, right? And as much as people want to point to Taylor Hall, I mean, Taylor Hall just hasn't scored at a high enough rate for me to look at that as being exciting. And I know Paul Mieri hasn't had the most prolific season this year, but does he just not scream Islanders player and fitting that style perfectly for them? Like, to me, him on that team, he could be exactly what they're missing.
I like Washington in that division, but here's the problem with them, that if they fall out of number one spot, they've got a date most likely with the Islanders, or, you know, if the Islanders don't finish first as well, you could potentially have a first round matchup between Washington and New York. I think the Islanders are that kryptonite to Washington. They're a great, you know, offensive team in the sense that they can put up goals on the power play, but that's just a bad matchup for Washington. We saw that yesterday. They lost 1-0. And really, they got outplayed by New York. So I still like Washington that division, but the Islanders are dangerous because, Dan, you're right. Barry Trotz, he can game plan like the best of them. He can shut it down. He can get his team to play a clamp down style, which they did yesterday, and there's not much you can do. So that's a bad matchup for Washington down the road if they meet in the playoffs.
We're going to dive back into the Vancouver Canucks coming up after 4 o'clock as we get into the idea of the Canucks spending again, what the next moves are, and what does it tell us about the future of who's steering the ship and more with the Canucks. But I wanted to get to this text. It's from Rager, who's a longtime listener to Sportsnet 650. I leave for a month and the entire 650 landscape has shifted. In what world does Sat get to dictate whether one of the greatest segments in radio history gets obliterated because of one guy? Thought it was the People's Show and not the Sat Show. This will be unforgivable.
Well, Rager, it is being decided by the people. It's not me. I have one vote. I am one man with one vote. It is a poll that's being held right now. The people get to decide. So it is the people deciding, Rager, whether Password will live or if Password will no longer exist on Sportsnet 650. But to those who are fearful and are seeing the early results, and I know the pro Password side is taking this hard. And I understand your fear. I hear your fear. I know I don't represent you, but I tell you that I know what you want. I understand you want to be involved. I understand trivia is something you want. And I promise you that if the poll numbers hold, and we'll get an update in a second, if they hold and Password is gone, that we will still have a trivia segment that will be for the people, by the people, where you are still involved in trivia. So I promise you, trivia will be a part of it, just not in the shape of Password if it's voted out.
Okay, what do we know about elections, especially in the States? You don't call it after Florida, folks. This is day one. Password is a game for the people. It's rooted in democracy. That's the whole principle of Password. It's a game that doesn't take itself too seriously. We make fun of each other, the participants, the host. Everyone has a role. It's a democratic game for the people. You win prizes, but you also play for the entertainment, folks. Vote yes for Password. Vote yes for what is right. This is a message that is endorsed by me, Randeep Janda. Thank you.
Jay, Password must survive. Jay, get in on the poll question. It's up at Sportsnet 650. Okay? We're already into the big time of the vote. It's going to be up for 3 days. So make sure you and all your Password plan friends go over and make sure they vote. Everybody gets their vote. Everybody deserves to vote. We there's no voter suppression here on the People Show.
No.
We're
this
all
is a completely legitimate poll.
And we will make sure that this is all on the up and up. As of right now, the poll's been up for a little less than an hour, and currently 63% of the vote is saying no, Password should not continue to run on the People's Show.
You never call an election after Florida, folks. This is day one. Still early.
It is.
Still early.
The one thing I will say, though, that this split has been pretty uniform since the vote began. Since the vote started picking up at least 50, and it's over well over 400 at this stage, as soon as it picked up 50, it was at the 65-35 mm-hmm. split, 60-40, and that's held true up until this point as well. So, if the pro-password side really wants to win this election, they have a lot of campaigning to do here. You're going to have to turn a lot of non-voters out to vote for you.
Okay, one thing we got to keep in mind, though. Remember, Password was sweeping the nation. A lot of people in the East Coast are already sleeping. They're having dinner. They haven't really caught on yet. So I have faith. I have faith.
Uber cool, Rick. This is a bigger upset than 2016. Luke the bartender. Just wait for the mail-in votes. Don't stop the count.
Don, I told you, Sats a diva. This one is in Russian. I don't know what it says. That's from Sober and Black Canuck. Yeah.
Sweeping the globe, folks. We got Russian voters. Russia is not influencing this vote. I can confirm that, I think.
And Gary says, Rager for Password Nation president. He also said, Sat, stop saying Palmieri. Let Riccio say it.
Palmieri.
Yes.
I can quickly confirm. I don't know if I should reveal the identity of who voted. But one of Reach Deep Nation and one of Password's biggest enthusiasts did vote on it, but says, I clicked on the wrong one, my fat fingers, and voted no. So even one of your proponents, like, you guys have lost the vote.
Oh my gosh.
Come on. Yeah.
We can confirm Eddie Lack had voted yes for Password to continue. So
what, he has voted yes?
Yes.
What happened?
I know you guys got all chummy and all of that.
How did you guys influence the vote?
Yeah. Look at this, man. Yeah, you guys see it was all trending in the right direction and you guys bribed him. Like, this is not the spirit of Password. You guys use bribes. You guys
not at all
the pot for somebody.
Not at all.
And Eddie himself, I mean, I saw the evidence. Eddie said his vote can be bought. And I decided not to buy his vote because that's not the way I roll. I want the people to be heard. I'm not going to influence anybody's vote.
Eddie texted us.
You should vote. And I'm just saying, like, there's smoke there. So you guys did some sideways
stuff. No. Eddie texted us at 3:21 saying, I did my part, guys. He's a Password fan. He truly believes in Password.
I don't know. The tapes are going to come out, and it's going to be, you guys called, and it's like getting Georgia to change the voting system.
The scandal is coming at some point. Well, it's time to go to break here on The People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. When we come back. Back in on the Vancouver Canucks, and also, not saying, just saying, we'll play at 440, get in your texts, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. You also want to get in on the Canucks talk, 604-280-0650, here on the People's Show, Sportsnet 650.